On this week's 51%, we get creative. Our associate producer Jody Cowan catches up with alternative soul artist Aniko to learn more about their creative process and what it's like to have your song go viral. And our Dr. Sharon Uffberg also speaks with a first-time documentarian hoping to shed light on the lack of access for deaf audiences at concert venues.
The entertainment industry has a really long ways to go before being truly inclusive.
I'm Jesse King. It's all up next on 51%.
I was standing around like one of those girls I had seen in a movie. The whole world was a movie back then. I had my sunglasses on, I wanted to be seen without seeing Shiloh Lita. I wasn't really in it, I didn't really get it.
You're listening to 51%, a WAMC production dedicated to women's issues and experiences. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Jesse King. Today we have a trio of stories and interviews for you about why we create. For some, it's a form of personal expression, while for others, it can be a way to spread an important message or serve as an act of revolt. If you are forever online, like me, you might be familiar with our first guest. Alternative soul artist Aniko has built a following of more than 6 million people across TikTok and Instagram, where they promote their own work and covers of other artists. Their breakout single, King's Affirmation, has more than 10 million views on YouTube and earned them a deal with Columbia Records. Their next single, Jericho, debuted at number 11 on Billboard's R&B digital song chart a couple months ago, and now they are leaving their hometown in Brooklyn to embark on a world tour. Aniko, who is non-binary, has performed for audiences across the U.S. and Europe, with upcoming dates in Australia. Amidst all of that, they recently spoke with our associate producer, Jody Cowan, about what drives their music and what it takes to bring it all to the stage.
I will be one of the greatest, that is of all, yeah, that is a promise. Always wanted to be famous, just being real, yeah, just being honest.
I'm reminded of that video of Michael Jackson, or that interview of Michael Jackson, where he's like, I don't like touring. And they're just like, okay, just, you know, just lie about it. It's fine. He's like, okay. And then they start recording and he's like, I love to tour.
That is me. What? Like, it's not my first time touring, but I haven't toured like multiple times. This is only my second round of touring. The only time I get to travel is literally when I'm performing, or like I have to go perform or do music. So like I was like, wow, I get to like see places that I've like never seen before and like never been to. So like that was like really fun. And of course I always like enjoy the part where I get to meet new people and, you know, experience new crowds. Every crowd is different. I think that's the interesting part about all of this. Every single crowd like has their own like energy. Every place has their own energy, and like even like Europe, so different. Like maybe it's because like since I'm not from Europe, people, they're probably like, we don't know when you'll come back here. So like the energy was like way more like receptive and like just so receiving, and like that was awesome. Whereas like there were a lot of dates on the US leg of tour where like people were really quiet and I'm just like, is everyone all right? You know, and I also can't see, you know, so I perform without my glasses. So that like affects all of that too. But like overall, the experience is always new, always different. Every single one, like no show is like the next one.
I became aware of King's Affirmation via social media. I think I came across an a cappella version and I was immediately just drawn to the rawness of the recording. Like your voice was incredible. And the messaging that was in the song, that was self-love and confidence and defiance in the face of any and all insecurity, is kind of what I was getting from that. I would imagine that not everybody heard the single as you released it first.
Yes, it was a lot of people that, I mean, unless they're like not on social media, which is rare in this day and age, but most people like have either known the a cappella and they don't know anything else, and they don't feel called to like seek anything else, or they hear the a cappella and they're like, where's the rest of it? Like, is there more to it? The reason why I started doing a cappellas is because, one, it's always been something that I've had a knack for. My voice has always been my instrument of choice. So like I've always done the layering of vocals and making my voice into a guitar, making my voice into a bass, or making it into a beat. Like that's something that I've done since I was like a kid. So the reason I had started doing, like, I had specific a cappella content, whereas that wasn't all of my content. It just so happened to be the content that reached people a lot. But I decided to do it because I just wanted to give people an incentive to like want to experience it in person, because it's like, wow, this is, if you're feeling what you feel, if I'm able to connect to you on the level that I can connect to you just with a vocal alone, no effects, no nothing, just me in my room singing for what, 15 to 30 seconds, then you can only imagine what the experience would be like with not just a vocal, but a band, not just a band of people who know my voice and people that I've worked with that kind of weave themselves into the art, into the voice, into the song. You should come to a concert and like experience it in real time, because we really put so much effort and so much time and energy and money into these things, money that we barely have. Hey, you know, I'm just keeping it a bean. Like, it's at a point where we're literally like fighting for pennies. Literally, we're fighting to, you know, have one stream at the very least be a penny, which I still think is crazy. With that being said, knowing all of those things, I do want people to know like how important it is to support your favorite artists in person, directly. These live performances, I don't have a choice but to put so much into it, because it essentially is the only other way I can connect with people outside of social media. Like, I create the music so that it doesn't just reach you, it stays with you. It stays with you and it scratches your brain in a way where you start to ask yourself questions about why you are and who you are. That's what I want to happen with the concert too, except like, I think experiencing that in physical form is definitely different, because like, if you know live music, you know how powerful it can be. Just being somebody that's grown up in church, I used to think like, wow, I love Jesus. I have to love him. Like, the things that I am experiencing when this music is happening, is that not what it is? But then I realized that like, it wasn't necessarily the message. What carries the message is the music, is the intonations, is the dynamics, is the chord progression. Like, all of it is science. Like, all of it is musical theory, really. And then also emotion. Like, all of these things matter as far as getting your message across. And I can say that like church and like hymnals, all having that kind of background really helped me figure out a way to reach people with a message that can actually like be the reason that they decide to change their life, that they decide to be better people.
Looking at, you know, songs like King's Affirmation and Jericho and certainly Armor as well, these are really personal songs, and like the I statements that are in there, after you conceive of them, are they hard to let go of?
They're not hard to let go of, because I hold on to them for so long because of the state of the music industry and how much effort and time and money it takes to make it an actual record to be put out. I know that's crazy to say, but like Armor, I wrote and recorded Armor the day after I recorded Jericho. That's how long I've had Armor. So like, I have been listening to it over and over. Like, I have that kind of neurodivergency where like I hyperfixate on music, especially if it moves me in a way. Like, it's, if I'm not feeling what my favorite artist makes me feel from my own music, then I know it's not all the way there. With Armor, Jericho, King's Affirmation, all of those things, like, I always return to them. Like, I would always go back to them and like listen to them myself and just like, just sit there and just listen. But I love letting them go and moving on. Wow, please. Because all I want to do is just make and release more music.
With the number of singles and remixes out, is there an album in the works, or do you have kind of a different approach plan for your art in general?
There is an album coming out. There is an album. We've actually been working on this album since 2019. I say we because it's me, my sister, and my brother-in-law, who's also my producer and engineer and sound engineer and stuff like that. we don't create specifically. It's like we're making this song for the album. No, we just create to create. If it comes, then it comes. If it doesn't, then it doesn't. I will always choose quality over quantity. And with the album, that's just what it's been. Like, we've been working on it since 2019, but it's only now that we're like, all right, I think now's the time. And you also have to, like, I mean, at least we do. We take into consideration everything that's happening in the world and when it might be right to put this out. When did the people actually need this? Because, like, it's not like I haven't been putting out art and music. I think it's more so, like, finally having a body of work that gives people an understanding of what it is that I'm doing. Not even who I am, because people will never understand who I am, and I am learning to be okay with that. I think this album will help people understand who I'm not and who they're not, and the things around us that affect us and don't affect us at the same time. It's really an album about waking up, the awakening, really. So the tour is called The Awakening Tour, and it's named after the album. It was supposed to be out at a certain date. Unfortunately, we couldn't put it out because of, believe it or not, Beyonce's album. We are under that label. We're not completely signed. It's a joint venture, but our date was actually the same exact date as hers. And they were like, yeah, no, you can't put it out that day. And we were like, why? Like, do you think it's going to make a difference? Like, be for real. But, you know, that was the only reason why, like, it ended up not coming out. But then we kind of just took that as, like, a sign to keep pouring into it. And we kind of just took that time and said, okay, well, it ain't going to come out now, but it's going to come out. It has to come out. It's actually necessary that it comes out more than ever. I know that the music that I'm creating is necessary. Like, people need it. And I just want to give the people what they need, even if they don't think they need it. Okay, just take it anyway. Just go ahead. I'm just going to put this right here.
And especially if you're going to be touring and the idea of being able to have an album to tour with and the merch to sell and having that be a bit of the revenue stream for an artist on the road. I imagine that's like they kind of go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm. They do. It would have been, like, really helpful if it came out. You know, what we've been doing is just not trying to focus so much on what we can't control and just focusing on what we can. It's very hard, though, and I'm never going to invalidate my feelings because I should be frustrated. It's very frustrating. It shouldn't be this hard. Labels shouldn't make it this difficult to release music. It shouldn't be this hard, and I do hope that I'll be a part of that change in the music industry where we start to care about music again, like, care about artists again, because we're people, we're human, and just here to remind people of the human experience.
You were born Aniko, yes? Your mother gave you that name?
Yes, that's my birth name.
How has your sense of identity evolved with your artistry?
It's been hand in hand, I guess. Like, I've never been able to, like, separate the two. Like, my artistry wouldn't exist without my sense of self. And my sense of self wouldn't exist without my music, without my artistry. For as long as I can remember, like, I've always been, like, super aware. Like, since I was, like, a wee little kid, like, I was just like, okay, this is what my name means. Like, shining star born amongst troubled times? Okay, well, it's my name. I guess it's who I am. Gonna have to be. So, like, how do I, and my brain was kind of like, okay, well, how do I live up to this? Like, how do I live up to my name? And I think my entire life has kind of just been me experiencing these very traumatic moments that have ended up shaping not just who I am, but why I do what I do today. And the artist Aniko is the exact person that is just Aniko. The music that I make, like, I make it because for majority of my life, I felt very unheard and I felt very ostracized and I felt shamed for what I loved, who I loved, or why I loved, or, like, why I was the way I was. I just always felt very different and, like, an outsider and, like, an alien. And I used to think that that was, like, not a good thing, like, that was a thing that I should be ashamed of and that I should try and fit in the mold. And for a majority of my life, that's what I did. I was trying to fit into this mold of this person that I didn't create, a mold that a bunch of other people created, that a system created. And no lie, like, it wasn't until like I made the conscious decision to take my artistry seriously that I started to take myself seriously. It wasn't until I started unmasking that, like, it kind of felt like my world was falling apart, but in reality, it was being built. What was falling apart were these walls. And that is what Jericho is about. Really, it's about creating your own identity from the ground up outside of the walls and the norms that Western society has created, especially as a Black person, especially as somebody who is marginalized, who's queer, who's trans, who's all of these things that they are that encompass this human being that breathes the same air as everybody else does. Like, what would happen? You know, what would it look like if we decided to take a step back from everything that we think we know about ourselves and start to create who we are from our own minds? Like, from things that weren't implanted, from things that weren't taught, just like what you've always intrinsically felt. That's really the core of it all. That's the core of everything that I do. I just want to be able to not just be myself. I want to leave this earth knowing that because I was so honest about me, that a bunch of people now are honest about themselves. And then because they're honest about themselves, their children are honest about themselves. And it kind of just, it gets passed down. And that is a form of revolution. That is a form of revolt. I've been a little bit cold and a little too bold. They were telling me to slow down. I've been in really deep holes, spinning out of control. Now I gotta go to war now.
That was alternative soul artist Aniko speaking with our associate producer Jody Cowan. To learn more, you can find them on TikTok and Instagram at in.iko. In Troy, New York, even the alleyways grow lively in the summer months. Hoping to highlight local artists and vendors, the Arts Center of the Capital Region recently launched its Alley Action Series with public art installations, live music, food and drinks, making stops at different alleys through November. WAMC's Samantha Simmons recently stopped by one alley to speak with artists there.
The five-part event, backed by funding through the American Rescue Plan Act, brings artists, residents, and vendors together to celebrate the city's cultural community. In its second year, the Black Party encourages people to explore downtown and support local artists and businesses. Lopador Luce is the artist behind a mural in the Church Street alleyway between Congress and Ferry Streets. Born in Germany, she says her work is inspired by losing two close friends. Pador Luce says the piece, referred to as Fresh Air, is meant to resemble a mind renewal or a fresh start.
It allows other people that are walking in the community to experience a new world and also like relate just by walking down the street, and it's accessible. Art, it makes art accessible to other people to experience and and to, you know, connect with somebody that they may not ever meet.
Gwen Krause is the chair of the Arts Center of the Capital Region.
Public art uplifts, inspires, amuses, provokes sometimes, and delights. What we are learning is that the arts also have a measurable, positive economic impact on our communities.
The events feature live music, food and drinks, and creative opportunities. Mayor Carmela Mantello, a Republican, says initiatives like this support her goal of brightening the city's 42 miles of alleyways.
It's not the back door, it's the front door to economic development. It's the front door to dominoing what our businesses are doing.
After taking office in January, Mantello created a Quality of Life Action Task Force, which aims to clean the streets and enhance the city's landscape. Curry Ketchum, the owner of Mi Casa, a restaurant that specializes in Spanish fare, says people of all cultures can come together in Troy.
It's phenomenal because it really gives you life to the alley. And then we have a lot of plans to do, to light it in, to put cameras. It's going to be great to make it more safe for everybody. And then come back to the old days when people used to come here.
Events continue in rotating alleyways through November. There's more information at WAMC.org. Samantha Simmons, WAMC News, Troy.
Our last guest today felt driven to create, to spread awareness about an important issue. Kat Brewer is a longtime teacher, concert goer, and native of San Francisco, but she's a first-time filmmaker whose 2022 documentary Sign the Show takes a look at the lack of accessibility for deaf audiences at live entertainment venues.
To have access, you know, to a show, I think we do take for granted. I don't have to think about, oh, well, that's the night they have the interpreter.
I said, hey, there's no interpreter. There's nothing you can do.
People who are deaf or hard of hearing still enjoy going to concerts, to the opera, to plays and comedy shows, just like anybody else. But if there's no interpreter, that makes it a lot harder for them to take part. For Brewer, Sign the Show became a years-long passion project, celebrating deaf culture and American Sign Language. There were a lot of bumps along the way, but the final project ultimately won the support of artists like Kelly Clarkson, Andre 3000, Matt Maxey, Nate Bargates, and more. It hit the festival circuit a couple years ago, won some awards, and is now available to stream online. Brewer recently spoke with Dr. Sharon Ufberg, co-founder of the wellness company Borrowed Wisdom, about how it all came together.
I was going through a really challenging time in my life. I was going through a divorce. And for me, music has always been very healing. And so I started going to concerts. And I was in my 40s, and I've been going to concerts since I was probably like 8 years old. But I had never before seen an American Sign Language interpreter signing a show. And I was fascinated. I've studied communication for couple decades now. And I started speaking with the interpreter and then communicating with the deaf people through the interpreter because I was completely ignorant. I had no idea that deaf people enjoyed music or liked going to live performances. But through those conversations, I found out that they do, but they face a lot of barriers and challenges to getting access to it. So I was really upset and angry. And then I was really sad that I have taken for granted my entire life my hearing privilege. And so I decided to write an article for the college newspaper, and a roommate of mine suggested that I make a documentary. And 10 years later, here it is.
What challenges did you face trying to turn this film into a reality?
Sure. I think that overcoming self-doubt was probably the biggest, because I had people who I thought were friends who were questioning what I was doing, saying things like, you know, why do you think you could do this? Why do you think people are going to give you interviews? So that was hard, but I had to kind of push through those seeds of doubt that they planted and just keep going and growing and creating. So I think overcoming self-doubt, gaining the trust of the deaf community, which is totally understandable. It's a community that has been oppressed for years by hearing people. There's a really rich history with Alexander Graham Bell that I encourage people to do their research. And so that was really challenging, but also really rewarding once I did. And then funding was probably one of the hardest things. I self-funded for the first few years. I cashed out my 401k, spent my life savings, and then I was really lucky that I found an angel investor. She is a disabled woman who believed in me and my project, and she helped fund it and help finish it. And I am eternally grateful for that, because without her, I don't think it would have happened.
I know it took you a long time and a lot of perseverance, and that, you know, 10 years is a long time for a project to enter into fruition. What has been your biggest takeaway from the experience?
I think I have kind of three takeaways. The first is that the entertainment world is still so very exclusionary. For the example that I can give is about 20 years ago, Marley Matlin performed with Garth Brooks. She interpreted him singing the national anthem at the Super Bowl. This is like 20 years ago. And the camera was right on her the whole time. The deaf community, the deaf viewers had access to this, you know, amazing performance. And here we are 20 years later. And, you know, it's a separate stream for people to watch the interpreters. You may see a flash of them on the screen, but there is not full and equal access. Separate is not equal. And so I think that the entertainment industry has a really long ways to go before being truly inclusive. And I'm hoping that Sign the Show will create a cultural shift in entertainment to allow for open access at all live events so that everyone can enjoy it. I also think I learned to be patient, for sure. Patience, you know, and not giving up. And then for me, like, my motto through this whole film was hustling with gratitude and love. Gratitude for every yes I got and gratitude for every no I got, because it doesn't mean that no wasn't the make or break of me. And I feel like that can apply to any life, anybody's life, anything that they're going through. A no is not the end of the world. You can keep continuing on.
I love those. Those are fantastic and very inspiring. What's next, Kat? What's on your agenda? What new dream are you cooking up?
Oh, wow. I definitely have, you know, I started this film 10 years ago, right? And so much has changed and there are more layered issues that have come up. And so I definitely have some ideas for another film. Maybe it's a Sign the Show part two, but I definitely have something in the works. And if someone wants to forward fund this, please get in touch with me. I would love that. But yeah, it's definitely revolves again around the deaf community and incorporating more of what I've learned along the last 10 years, you know, and including more deaf content creators, more deaf performers, more deaf interpreters. I really want to be able to highlight this amazing community.
That was Kat Brewer, director of Sign the Show, speaking with our Dr. Sharon Ufberg for her 51% segment, Force of Nature. You can watch Sign the Show on Apple TV, Google Play, and Tubi. To learn more about the need for increased accessibility for deaf audiences, go to signtheshow.com. Thanks for listening to this week's 51%. 51% is a national production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany, New York. It's produced and hosted by me, Jesse King. Our associate producer is Jody Cowan, and our theme is Lolita by the Albany-based artist Girl Blue. Just a reminder that you can listen to 51% anytime at our website, wamcpodcast.org, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can stay in the loop on all of WAMC's shows by signing up for our weekly newsletter, Airwaves, at wamc.org. We hope you'll join us next week. Until then, I'm Jesse King, 51%.
I was every single girl, I was nobody else, I was so sure of myself. I was 15 and a half, he was a hollow laugh. And I lost my cool somewhere along the way. At night and on the hallway, I had to learn how to look away. I lost my cool, no electricity, hot rain on the concrete, sweet.